Well, welcome everybody to another edition of the Forever Bristol City podcast. It's a bit like Groundhog Day because we're always saying it can't get any worse than it did last time, but it has got worse than it did last time and of late. Saying that, we did get two draws prior to today. Final score at Adams Park. It finished Wycombe Wanderers 2, Bristol City 1. Disgraceful. I'm not going to swear. I'm just going to press this little button a few times here just to get it off my chest, which is the old... That's what I think of it this evening. Joining me are Mark and Ian. How could I forget you, Ian?
Ian, he's nearly forgotten you already. It's not nice, is it?
Ian, I mean, as we usually do... As we usually do... Although there's not a great deal to talk about, we'll go through, we'll begin by both of you giving me a quick 30-second resume of the game. You know, so first you, Ian, just sum up the 90 minutes in 30 seconds before we get into the detail.
Okay, City were probably the better team in the first half. Backinson scored a worldie, even better than the one he got at Wednesday. Second half, we did the opposite of what we needed to do. That would be, and we were therefore pitiful. So pitiful. that would be my summing up.
Yeah, Cookie's just said Cookie 1988 said definitely generous with the beeps there, Dave. Yeah, I think I have been. Mark, your thoughts, and let's not have a quote from one of your films. All right.
Well, I'm mad as hell, and I can't take this anymore. But I am.
Yeah, network. Yeah, like Peter. 76. Like, Peter Finch. Yeah, move on.
Peter Finch. Yeah.
30 seconds.
City edged the first half, looked comfortable with Angela Lansbury and Tyreek Backinson in good form, anchoring the midfield, and generally keeping Wickham's crosses from far outside the box. Nadge played in Backinson, and another banger of a shot from 25 yards flew past Stockdale. Then on 55 minutes. Backinson was spiked by Thompson, then he effectively stopped playing, and so did City. The bombardment began. Sessegnon bottled it, and it was only a question of time when Wickham would get a winner. 92 minutes, end of. The season can't end soon enough, and Nigel Pearson's job for me, and probably for Ian, is really in question because you've got to do better.
Well,
than this.
Steve Lansdowne's left us with a shower of shit. That's all right. No, that's putting it mildly. Let's talk about the game because that's what we usually do. I mean, the starting lineup. I'm sick of seeing Famara Diju pull on a Bristol City shirt. I'm getting
the accidental
sick.
Tourist.
I'm getting pretty sick of seeing Naki Wells. There was one incident in, I think it was the second half when Diju did put a ball, good ball in. He blasted it over. And then Diju, again, a slide rule pass from Backinson. I think that's when he got spike marked. And he blasted the ball across. It's just, they just shouldn't be there. I mean, Ian, the starting lineup, yeah, we're sick. On paper, Backinson, Nadge, Massengo, and Lansbury. That looks a strong midfield, but it's like four pieces of four different jigsaws. It just doesn't work, does it? What were your thoughts on the lineup and with Sess coming in on the right? Your thoughts on the lineup, Ian?
I was struggling. I called the diamond formation before it was actually put up, but Dave Febbs has tweeted and said the commentating team corrected it and Nadge was playing wide right, and he's not a wide right player. He's got no pace.
No.
So what did I think? I thought it was narrow, lacked width, and lacked, apart from Backinson, lacked any creativity. The other thing it lacked is physicality. I disagree with Mark. I thought Lansbury was appalling tonight. His passing radar was a million miles off. For some reason, Zach Viner seemed to think the ball was hot potato, and every time the ball came anywhere near him, he clumped it, which is okay if you've got quick forwards and chase it, or forwards up front who can control the ball and play other players in. Unfortunately, we didn't have either. Pham had one of his games where he couldn't trap a bag of cement. The only thing I will say in defence of the bloke, and I often do it, is the service he gets is utterly appalling.
But there you go. That comes back to what I said about the midfield, because the midfield, you look at it and you think, well, individually, they look all right, But, I mean, how many times, Ian, have we said Massengo? He's running round. It does look like he's going to be off. He's not renewed his air appointment, according to what somebody was saying on OTIB. But what does Massengo do? As you say, Ian, he's not scored. He's not done any assists. He does win free kicks. But at midfield, it's just four people that don't seem to know each other. There's no cohesion there, is there?
Well, you really need to look at... If you have players in the midfield, we all knew Brian Tinian was a left-sided player. It came to the club as, I'll call it a left-winger, but wide left midfield player. And gradually, as he got a bit older, he moved into the centre, which a lot of players do. But you knew he was a creative midfielder who could take great set pieces and score goals. Well, we haven't got one of them. Then you had players in and around him who could tackle and win the ball. Yeah. And perhaps somebody like Khalifa Cisse, who could play in front of the back four, screen it, and stop things like that. I don't really know. I mean, I think with Backinson, we've got to get him further up the field because, I mean, the kid's got a cracking shot on him, and I'd like to see him do more of that.
But then that further up the field role, Ian, was where Massengo seemed to be. One minute he was, next minute he was sort of, he was all over the place. But you're right. I mean, Backinson's shown he can score. Mark, I mean, the lineup, from your perspective, it would have been nice just to see one of the youngsters start because we know what Wells and Diju do, which is 50% of absolutely all. What did you think of that lineup when you saw it? Uninspiring was my view.
Yeah, I mean, we were playing lots of long balls early on, and it was only at the end of the first half when Massengo was turning balls over on the right. We started to see Cessigny on overlaps on the right, and that pressure brought the first goal. Yeah. Wickham, for their part, we were just keeping him. It was mainly with Jason McCarthy on the right, just pumping balls into the box. They had quite a few shots, but we mainly kept them at arm's length. Bentley was very comfortable. But the second half, we just didn't really compete. And City, compared to 23 of the teams in this division, are a bunch of bottlers. Apart from Thomas Kalas, even Viner was tentative. I think he got cropped early on. I think if Piazza or one of the other players jumped on top of him, and I don't think he was letting the ball drop. If a defender lets the ball drop in the air, you know there's a problem, isn't it? If you don't get that first touch in, you're in trouble.
I know.
So with him and Cessignon, they just will.
Well, I didn't. I was sat there and I thought I'd sooner be in the gun. I finally put pen to paper on 26 minutes when there was a little move which ended with a useless knock over the ball by Tommy Rowe. But then we went from the sublimely awful to the sublimely brilliant when it was good play, probably the only thing Nash did all game, and laid the ball to Backinson. And as you said a moment ago, Ian, that was a class strike, wasn't it? There's no doubt about that. That would have graced any Premier League game the way he stroked that in.
Oh, yeah, the keeper didn't smell it. You know, there's a note just coming in, Nigel Pearson on Radio Bristol, some players can't be trusted. So
we know
he's talking about. Yeah. And we've heard it before.
Yeah.
So I think if you look at it, Akinfenwa would come on. That's his first goal in 38 games. Right? Yeah. That's a penalty. Now, and if you took the table over the last 30 games, we'd be bottom.
Oh, we would. We've got 30. I said at the top, we got before we went live, we have got, since that opening flurry of four wins in a row, right? That was 39 games ago. We have accumulated 39 points, a point a game, and we've scored 34 goals. If we hadn't have had that opening four wins in a row, 100%, if we'd have got 8 points out of that, we'd have been very much the way we're playing, staying relegation in the face. Let's just finish off
the game. We scored 10 of those goals in our first five games because we drew 2-2.
No, I'd knock that off because we scored 42 and I knocked off 8, taking it down to 34. So, you know, that's, I think it was 10 in the first four. Was it 10 or 8?
10 in the first five because it was 10, 2-2.
I did the first four, which was the winning sequence. But, okay, we went in 1-0 up at half-time. It was scrappy. It was rough. We're playing against a team that probably cost to assemble half the cost in fees that Pham cost us 3 years ago. Oh, and he's going out the door for nothing, in a few weeks. Well, in a few weeks' time, it is now. Second half, we started, and I said Diju set up that chance for Naki Wells. He plays with a look on his face like he's got half a dozen lemons shoved in his mouth. And then Backinson, slide rule pass, got Diju got on the end of that, but a wasted cross. Then the goal, I'll come to you, Mark, for their equalising goal. It was Sessegnon, physicality, zero physicality, because he just let this big lump get in front of them and 1-1 on 64. How did you see that one?
We looked like we cleared the ball, but somebody played a great reverse pass to Mehmet, who took the position on off. He was a forward. He looked pretty decent against us down at Ashton Gate, mobile centre forward, but he got the ball to the byline. He played a great cross in, but Sessegnon turns his back at the back post on a stronger player. He could have gone. He could have put his head in where it hurts, but he didn't. He turned his back on the ball, and then Bentley's. It's a question of whether Bentley's can push the ball out. But the header was just too powerful. It hit the far post, and that was it. 1-0. It was
a sloppy goal, cross. Ian. Again, wasn't it? We're so weak in balls into the box. And I mean, should Bentley maybe have come and claimed it before it dropped over that far at the far side? What do you think?
Well, I don't think so, because of the way the cross came over, because you've got to remember, you can't just go and stand at the back post. Nope, that's where it goes. But I think the problem that we've got is you need a, I don't know who coaches defending set pieces, but I'd sack them.
Well, is that what Pat Mountain was here for? Because I thought he was a goalkeeping coach. Oh, no, René, the final turd, Gilmartin, is a goalkeeping coach, isn't he?
Well, they both are, Dave. And what?
Why do we need two goalkeeping coaches?
Well, because we're radically overmanned and we've got a wage bill that's 123% of our turnover. And that's obviously, according to some people, that's sustainable. My ass. Yeah. And what our players do at set pieces, they did it at Sheffield Wednesday, get the video if you can stand it. Get tonight, they get stuck under the ball at set pieces. They don't give themselves time to move to the ball with the marker. Yeah. So they get stuck under the ball every side. Tell me the number of times, very, very rarely, does a team take near post corners against us. It's always beyond the far post where we have players who either can't defend and or get stuck under the ball.
So, Ian, in that context, because one player who's been stuck under the ball on a number of occasions where we've been exposed at the back, and I'm just thinking one goal in particular, Norwich City, where the ball was played over Thomas Kalas. You know, again, you can't fault him for effort, but he's playing out of position on the left. And is he he's one of our better players, but is he part of that problem at the back? That although he's tall, he's nothing like Sean Taylor or even Aidan Flint was. We didn't have that problem with a player like Flint, a winning the first ball centre-half. He's not that, is he? And Zach Viner certainly isn't.
If he played on the right and you had Nathan Baker on the left, a fit Nathan Baker, which is probably, a dichotomy, isn't it? But you'd be okay because you'd have balance. When he played with Adam Webster, because Adam Webster is such a good player, Adam Webster played on the left, Kalas played on the right.
Yeah,
I'd still rather see us play a three. But you'd still have to put Kalas on the right because we weren't bright enough.
On the left, because you haven't got anybody to play on that.
On the left.
Side.
On the left.
You'd have to put Kalas on the left.
So what we need is to sign two in the summer.
Left-sided
centre backs. That's what we need. We can't play what we haven't got.
Well, you need one decent one and maybe Riley Towler as backup because you've got to get the wage bill down.
Dave, you need two because players get injured.
Yeah, but you have Towler as your backup player. We can't have the luxury of having two of first team under post-COVID finances, right? We cannot have the luxury of having two left-sided central defenders, right, of decent ability. Well, I don't think we can, but let's wait and see. We'll come on to transfers, well, one day when we get a manager or something. Mark, you said about Akim Fenwar coming on. I mean, he showed what he can do on 83 minutes, didn't he? He was dancing around in the penalty box, and it was only a good save by Dan Bentley, prevented him getting the second goal for Wickham on 83 minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was there. He had four players around him, and they were more worried about fouling him than they were getting a touch. And he curled the ball brilliantly to the left. And not only did Bentley save it, he managed to push it away from the player that was coming in, who would have just tapped the ball into an empty net. It was a superb. It was, and City defended. I mean, from the following corner, Ikpeazu again. I mean, he should have scored. He headed the ball down into the ground. It bounced over the bar. But going back to the defenders, we just don't defend aggressively. And when we had Bebster and Callas, you know, those two players, they were brilliant for us. But this season,
I wouldn't say Webster was an aggressive player. I think he was a classy player who knew what he was doing. But he was a left-sided player playing on the left side of the defence. You know,
we could rely on them in the air. I mean, we're the team that conceded the most goals from set pieces, aren't we? This season, you can see why. A lot of them, like you said to Ian. Ian said the ball is hooked back from the back post or headed back, and then somebody is not in position to get the overload. And the last thing we saw against Wednesday, we saw against Coventry, against Norwich, against Luton away, it's just countless times.
They get between us, don't they? Ian, I mean, if we'd have come away from this with a 1-1 draw and it was very much looking like that was going to be on the cards, we'd have been talking about a scrappy performance, but we've got a point that ensures we're safe from relegation. But then, you know, lo and behold, 91 minutes, I see Stockdale, his shirt is almost the same colour as the outfield player's shirts, but he was up there. And goalkeeper putting in the shot, and what's Palmer doing, raising his arm? He's inviting the penalty, isn't he? A bit like Henry Lansbury did on Saturday with the hand, which eventually got overthrown. But what was Palmer doing? You know, that was just appalling, wasn't it? Or stupid?
Yeah, I don't think you'll see Palmer again under Pearson. He's the one he's pointed out about, you can't trust players. He's one of them. He's not the only one. But I don't think he'll be in a squad on Saturday. Let's put it that way. Sunday.
You don't. Why are you picking on him? Why not some of the others?
Because of his rank stupidity. They just totally lost his discipline, didn't they?
Is he blaming him for that then?
What, the handball? I should say so. Who else are you going to blame for it?
I mean, once he didn't have his arm tucked in, he's nowhere near the ball. He's never going to stop the ball.
He had to stretch to handball it. I'd have given that, and I'm a City fan.
Yeah.
So you can. There's no doubt the kid has got some ability, but the problem is he's never got in anybody's first team because of his application.
No.
On his day, he's a good footballer. I'll say that. You know, if you look at when he played at Swansea and all the rest of it, blimey. I thought,
But that's what he's done. He's done that the whole time he was here. Even when he was here on loan, he was a bit in and out. And then he didn't start in the team. He came in and did a bit. And then under Pearson, he's come in and you've probably got about two good games out of him, maximum three, 200 minutes on the pitch out of Casey Palmer. And that was it. And I think he did the same at Swansea on loan. So you're right. I mean, he can't be trusted.
And was it $4.5 million we spent on him?
I know. Well, another...
Three and a half.
It's another legacy. Scattergun approach. I mean, Akin Fenwar, old man, I think, is he 38?
38.
Stroke the ball past. It was a well-struck penalty, wasn't it? Because he sent Dan the wrong way. And while we're talking, we're not going to bother with team scores. While we're talking about players, anybody notice Dan Bentley's haircut? I mean, God, I got my haircut this week. I was starting to look like the mad professor, and I haven't got a lot of hair. But whoever did his hair, looks like they stuck a pudding basin over it. It was a classic.
He looked like a cast member from Blackadder, didn't he? One of the
Yes. Or that one on that little series that set out in Roman times. You know, the little kiddie on there with the sort of. Well, it was a Plebs. Bad version. What's it called?
Plebs.
Plebs. Or a bit like a poor man's Peaky Blinders haircut. But I got to read out some of the messages on here. That was the final score then.
Peaky Blinders.
Right, there's 45 messages on here. I'm not going to read all of them, but there's a good one that came on a few moments ago. PBG 04182. Try and put your real names on there rather than a code, because people like Les and Tomo and RS Fabrics, it sort of sounds better than PBG 04182. But he says... The person says, this gentleman is a legacy of that clown, player collector, yeah, clubs in the bag, Johnson, and the snake Ashton, who slithers out the back door, leaving one hell of a mess. The Lansdownes took their eye off the ball, not that they have a clue, and left the club to be completely run by the bull-shitting Ashton. Now the chickens have come home to roost. Totally 100% agree with that. I mean, Ian, I think you summed that up pretty well there, don't you agree?
Yeah, but who employed him?
Well, Lansdowne.
Right. Okay, so...
Somebody else, the same bloke. We look like a team on a Sunday morning whose best players left for better teams in the summer. Sunday morning team who've been on the piss, says James.
Steve Lansdowne, John Lansdowne, where are they? And they've allowed this to happen. Because it's like the 14 players being out of contract. That don't include the two that have already gone because they had to go because they're out for the season injured. So he's presided over this. And as he quite rightly said in one of his interviews, I can't remember, not the podcast, but an interview, it all comes down to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've got 14 players, £14 million worth, walking out the door. In 3 weeks' time, May the 9th, they're gone, out of contract, unless, of course, they're injured, in which case we've got to keep treating them. I don't think we've got to keep paying them, but we've got to keep treating them until they're better. So you've got £14 million worth going for nothing. Now, if that isn't a strategic decision, there's somebody seriously wrong somewhere because they couldn't have woke up one morning and thought, oh, we got 14 blokes out of contract in a few weeks' time. Because I've been banging on about it for the last year to the point I've got on my own nerves. Never mind anybody else's. But I just say, what are you going to do about it? It must be, let's say it's a strategy. So you might have thought, right, that's it. We'll let all these blokes go and we'll bring in a load of lads. And I think the three types of signings we're going to get will be Premier loans, free agents and League One players, right? Yeah. Who won't want the money? Now, that is, and I've been talking about Pham for 14 months, saying if he offer him the contract, if he doesn't sign it, sell him. Yeah. Simple as that.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, I've had people say to me on Twitter and people ring me up and say, well, you know, our midfield next season. You've got to remember, we got Joe Williams, we got Liam Walsh. Well, hang on a minute.
No, I know.
Are they gonna be fit? I mean, Walsh is out of contract anyway. Are they gonna be fit? And how many games are we gonna get out of the season? It's a bit like saying, well, Baker is a really good centre back. I think he is. But
he's played
20 games a season.
Yeah.
He's been here, he's played 80 games, he's been here 4 seasons, and for 20 games, he's been off before halftime, either sent off or injured.
Yeah.
So we're that's near his birthday. I mean, he's been sent off.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm sick to death of hearing about it now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this whole thing about players.
Next season, we could be a team like Wigan. Because of administration, they lost 14, 15 players who walked out the door. We're basically starting from scratch again, aren't we, both of you? Because we have to rebuild a side. And we could do it potentially without a manager because his place is in question. And a director, of an operations director, Werhan and Ashton. Yeah. And it's all down to the shambolic running of the club.
At the top, shambolic. Which you would say is John Lansdowne rather than Steve, because Steve has delegated it. But as we all know, for the best part of the last 9 months, John has been over in the family residence somewhere in the West Indies. Well, those of us that did research know where that is. Guys, Nigel Pearson, I mean, is it the players? The one thing that I say about him is you can, well, he's inherited a squad that is hit by injury. That's known. So, you know, we're left with a turd. But even if it's a turd, you can polish a turd, right? And it's still a turd, but it might look a little bit better. Ian, we don't seem to have any pattern of play. You talk about defending. He's a defender. We've got two ex-England coaches there, right? Mm-hmm. It's just a mess, isn't it? On the field. Yeah. So what is he doing? I'm not going to give him the benefit of the Borough game. Yeah, that's maybe being a bit harsh, but he's got 9 points out of 33. That's 36 points as near as damn it. Just extrapolating his time. I mean, at what point, you said before we went live, you don't think Pearson's going to be here now, do you? Do you think it's going to be his choice or what? What do you think?
I genuinely don't think he's the man for the job. The more I see his team play, albeit I understand about the injuries, but in fairness, Dean Holden had that to contend with as well.
Yeah.
I think Mark Ashton has, you know, talk about a rat leaving a sinking ship, you know, going on about what a great position the club are in to move forward. Well, how do you work that out? Because I genuinely can't see it. I'm an experienced businessman. I understand numbers. I can't see how we're in a great position. We're not in a great position.
We've got infrastructure. We've got infrastructure. That is the only part of this club. No, but that is the only part of this club.
You can't sell it.
No, I know.
You can't. It's not like owning, I don't know, a machine that's worth 10 million that you can sell. And then the only thing we've got that we can sell is the ground.
It's a platform. So if you look at the ground, no, it's a platform, right? It's better than it was. But as we said on the pod the other week, Steve Lansdowne has spunked away over 250 million. It's got to be in that order. If you look at the infrastructure and funding losses for the last 15 years, right? And a lot of it has been through making poor decisions of a football nature, even bringing in Mark Ashton. I mean, you know, you wind the clock back, yeah? The one close season we got right with player transfers was the summer of 2014-15 when Cottrell was allowed to go out and we had all the players signed by before the 1st of July, ready to go on that pre-season tour. And everything since then, it's looking more and more like that period after Johnson Senior's demise, isn't it? What do you say, Mark, about that?
I mean, How have we let it get to this? You know, like Ian said, with all those players' contracts running down. I mean, Johnson Senior lost it at the end, but he wouldn't let players hold the club to ransom on contracts. Remember Bradley Orr? I think he dropped him for a number of games. You remember that, Ian, when he wouldn't sign a new contract? And he was, you know, quite ruthless at turfing players out of the club, although he probably didn't put great foundations in place. But we let it come to this. One thing that Steve Lansdowne said after he got rid of Dean Holden was stuck with me. I don't want somebody come into the club who's going to undo all the great things, all the good work that we've done. What, a culture of failure? Not even threatening the top six? A club going backwards?
Well, this is
that sort of legacy.
This is it.
We're a joke, really, because we laugh at our neighbours across the city who are going to get relegated. We're not much better. And we've got this great stadium, great community club, but we've got players who are a bunch of bottlers who can't even beat what is probably a League Two team punching above their weight, who deserve to win tonight. A team of bottlers who are a disgrace. I just don't think that they can play with Nigel Pearson. Probably told them some own truths as people are messaging on the board. And it's gone wrong.
But when you say players are bottlers, who are the bottlers then? I mean, let's just run through the team, right? And, you know, Bentley, he does his best. He's done a very good job. Sessegnon, on loan player, based on that goal tonight, bottler. Are you calling Zach Viner and Thomas Callas bottlers because they're heart of a defence that has got the worst set-piece record in the division? What do you say about?
I mean, they're sometimes. I mean, you know, you watch some teams and they're prepared to die on the pitch to get to the ball. We don't do that sometimes. And we got Famara Zizou, who's just walking around. I mean, I saw him against.
All right, so the bottlers,
just not then. Trying.
But the bottlers, then the bot. Let's look at the midfield. You can't call Tyreek Backinson a bottler.
No,
you couldn't call Tommy Rowe. Tommy Rowe a bottler.
Adam Nagy, Henry Lansbury.
Masengo and DJ.
To some extent.
Right. Ian, who are the bottlers? Who are the bottlers, Ian, in your mind? Who are the bottlers that should not one
Casey Palmer.
Moment when he came on as a sub, who should not appear against Luton at home on Saturday, Ian, out of that starting lineup? Never to be seen again in a City shirt, whether they're in contract or not.
Well, it I'm not trying to get out of answering it, and I will answer it, but some of it depends who's fit. I think Tommy Rowe, fitting on form, is a decent player. I mean, I would say if Jada Silva's fit, don't bother about an under-23 game. If he's fit, he's trained now for 3 or 4 weeks, get him in the side as a wing-back, play 3 centre-backs. I get Mariappa back in there.
Who did you say the first name? I missed that.
Tommy Rowe,
Jada Silva.
Oh, Jada Silva.
Yeah, I was talking about. Yeah, I'd put if you look, I'd play with wing backs because then you can have 3 in midfield and 2 up front. It might be an idea to give young Lewis Britton a start up front as a what you call an orthodox
big man up front.
An orthodox, yeah. I mean, because he's different from the other lads. They're what I'd call smaller, quicker second strikers, and he's a big lad, and he likes the physical challenge of it. I know he's only a young kid, but I'd like to see him. Let him start. Okay, if it's not going great, hook him. Now, one thing about Pham, and I'll say it again. I mean, one of the things that he does, he must have headed more balls clear from our penalty area tonight than anybody. And he seems to be the only one who wants to get there first. So if you leave him out, you need somebody else who can head the ball away. Now, Taylor Moore's not fit. He's out for the season, apparently.
Somebody put about bringing Taylor Moore in ahead of Riley Towlett. No, sorry on that one. Taylor Moore is a right-sided player. That's why his confidence got shot to shit this season, because he was played
If you brought in, so let's say you want to play a back three. Riley Towlett plays on the left-hand side of a back three, so give him a go.
Yeah.
You can't do any worse than lose.
No.
So you play Mariappa in the middle, Kalas on the right, or Mariappa on the right, Kalas in the middle, Riley Towlett. Then you play your 2 wing-backs. Sessegnon Hunt, not much to choose between him, to be honest. And I play Jade De Silva on the left in the midfield. I think Backinson's got a start. Don't like Lansbury very much. And old Pratt, you could put Zach Viner in that holding role in midfield. Backinson and Masengo, that gives you 3 that'll run around, tackle, and Backinson might get you a goal or get you a pass. And then go up front with 2 strikers. Naki Wells wouldn't bother me at all if he left the club, because I don't think we've ever seen him at his best and got the best out of him. Because if you talk to QPR fans, and QPR are my bet, if they can keep hold of their best players, they're my bet for
next season.
Going for it this season.
Yeah,
and they're very good, aren't they?
I've also got a list of 3 managers. Unfortunately, they're all in work. I would get here in front of Nigel Pearson.
Who are they? Go on, Ian.
Warburton.
No. Lee Bowyer, for the job he's doing at Birmingham. Mark Robbins. I watched Coventry play Rotherham. Coventry have got the biggest side in the world, but they stopped Rotherham from playing because they pressed, they played high, and they didn't sit in their penalty area waiting for Rotherham to cross the ball and give away stupid free kicks. And the one I'd really like is Valerian Ishmael up at Barnsley.
Yeah.
I definitely...
The last 2 you could get, Birmingham, Bowie would probably still see them even now, despite their off-field ownership issues. He would probably see Birmingham as a bigger club than us. But as you say, Mark Robbins, who weeks ago we were saying, well, we don't want him, we want Nigel Pearson. Mark Robins does, I think Coventry won at Stoke tonight, didn't they? Yeah. And as
they played well, they countered Rotherham,
and Robins is a Lansdowne favourite, yeah, because he's tried him here before, and the Barnsley guy. Yeah, so those two are there. I mean, somebody said, Tomo said, somebody else earlier in this thread, we got so many messages on here, that said about Chris Wilder, yeah, would he be a contender?
He's got an identity with his teams and a style of play.
And he did on a low budget, and he got
He bought British and Irish players until this season.
Yeah.
And they had an identity. It's funny when you start tinkering with a team. Although Sheffield United's problem and the problem with promoted teams like them is scoring goals. And if you look at, you know, they got Sharp and McGoldrick with a combined age of about 67. It's going to be difficult, you know. And the other players, I mean, they brought in a Rhian Brewster. I mean, that was a real sort of pink elephant, wasn't it? Because, I mean, I don't think he scored a goal this season. Now, they spent 40 million on him, and that really blew the budget.
Absolutely right.
They spent 18 million on him, not 40.
Oh, sorry, 18 million. Still, they, you know, they haven't done it. He hasn't scored a goal, has he?
You sound like you're down the bottom end of a corridor for it all of a sudden, Ian.
He's going to the east wing of the house, that's why.
Yeah, I know, he's got a big house down in Somerset.
It's in Devon, but he'll get 14, he'll get 20 goals in the Championship, provided he stays at Sheffield United, and no one else is going to buy him, because he's not going to get goals in the Premier League.
Yeah. So, I mean, what about...
But Wilder's available, isn't he? What we're saying is Wilder was available, his team's playing with an identity, and they worked their asses off.
He's currently having a period of reflection, which is what people have. They don't have a rest. They have a period of reflection. Normally,
what
after
what happened to gardening leave? It's much easier to say.
Yeah, well, they're on. I mean, somebody's just put a message on here. You know, Wilder was on 70 grand a week, and that's why he wanted 4 million quid for his payoff. So I would say it's different if they've paid him off, and Lansdowne offers him 30 grand a week. Or something like that. He might be
We're saying all this speculation about Nigel, but I mean, Taze has put on here a message, and apologies for all the other people that put messages and comments, but I'm sure you can all see what others are saying as well. But Taze has said, why would we go for those managers who are they going to be any better than Pearson? We're being judgmental about Pearson on 11 games with 14 players out injured. Right. So right here, right now, right, I'm going to put my head on the block and I'm still prepared to back Pearson.
I would give Pearson a chance. The problem is Lansdowne's left him. He's left it in the club in a bit of an untenable position because he's left it so long to make a decision. There's uncertainty and the players have just shown up. Results have tanked. And they're in a position now where Lansdowne could say, well, you know, you're not getting any results. The club's going in the wrong direction. I need to look at alternatives. But he hasn't even got a CEO who's going to stay at the club now. He needs to sell season tickets.
Talking about CEOs, I can't believe that he's being kept on until the end of May, allegedly.
Well, that shows you what shambles the club
is. There's nobody there to run it. It's such a dichotomy to use Ian's word. You know, somebody on OTIB has put, you know, it'd be nice to have a chairman that gives a shit. Well, the chairman does give a shit because he spent all the money on the ground and he spent all the money on the, high performance center or whatever it is. Why not just call it a deluxe training ground? He does give a shit, but when it comes to taking football decisions, he has not got a clue.
No.
I don't think anybody listening who's bothered to listen and putting in these comments, that I don't think there's much disagreement on the things that have gotten wrong with the club. And it started with the players, you know, the players in that start of 17-18 season right? They were, you know, they wanted away, and we've been on a slow decline of 3 years. And what's happened, it's gone from a gradient of about 1 in 8, and over the last, I'll say last 5 weeks, it's gone down to about a gradient of 1 in 3.5. I mean, we are like going down in the Raiders of the Lost Ark, that sort of railway thing in the caves, you know, with nobody in control on the tracks, right? You know, I mean, we're lucky that there are only 3 games to go.
I can't see us winning any. Can you? I can't see us getting a point. I mean, Ian disingenuously. No, I'm only kidding, Ian. A few weeks ago, I mean, we didn't think we'd get any points, and we scraped a point against Sheffield Wednesday and the home game against Forest. But can you honestly say, based on that shower of that, we could get a point against Luton, Millwall, who are going to be strong and physical, and Brentford? I mean, really, it's.
Well, I think Brentford have gone off a little bit, but look, you look at the last 3 games.
Not as much
you're
as
right.
We have.
I mean, you're right. Look, I mean, wouldn't it be great if we could beat Luton and then get a draw at Millwall and a draw against Brentford? That would give everybody hope. But I mean, Ian, we've been saying for 2 months now, well, ever since Holden's gone, there's got to be some sort of change, as in some plan going forward, because we haven't even talked about the medical. Well, we talk about it every week, the medical department and the injuries. You know, what's happened to Danny Simpson? Mm-hmm. Is he out for the season now? That's another one that's gone, is it?
He's got cramp, hasn't he?
Well, that's bollocks. Yeah,
he's got cramp in his hamstring.
It's definitely cramp. It's in his calf. No, look, Dave, Nigel Pearson said, oh, he's going to be all right. He's got cramp. I think he felt a bit embarrassed about bringing a bloke in that hadn't played any football. And I thought Danny Simpson, fitting on form, is probably better than the two we've got.
Correct.
At defending. But once again, he's 34. And you can't go on, you know, I know you need experienced players to see games out, but honestly, you know, is that what we're going to... Because I don't want to go down and watch that. The injuries have been a massive problem. We've currently got, I think it's 15 players out injured in the treatment room.
Yeah.
That doesn't help anybody.
No.
You've got to ask why. There's got to be an independent inquiry, and that should have started 2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And when I say independent, I mean completely independent. Somebody comes in, right, you're medical experts. We want you to look at the treatment the players are getting. We want you to look at training. We want you to look at everything.
Yeah,
where we're going for scans of the lot and come up with a recovery plan.
Yeah. But who's going to conduct, when you say about independent football clubs, the last consultant Bristol City brought into the football club was
Mark Ashton.
Ashton, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, now Tomo's made a good point here.
An independent medical expert. I'm not talking about a consultant like me.
Somebody's got to engage that person and set the terms of reference. Can you see either John or Steve Lansdowne engaging somebody and giving them terms of reference to conduct the survey that you see is required in the medical?
They could organise a piss up in a brewery, David. Are they going to do that? I mean, I don't trust them.
Well, hang on a minute. Steve Lansdowne has managed to finish up with a couple of billion quid and living in Guernsey. So, yeah.
Well, no, I mean, based on the way the football clubs run, sorry.
But there are able people down there. You could give that to somebody like Mark Kelly, for example. You don't have to know anything about football. You just have to go out and get a top-level consultant
Tomo made a good point on here, right? Look at it this way, right? Pearson's 58 or 59 years old, which is still
57.
He's 57 year old, right? He knows football. He's played at the highest level. He's managed at the highest level. He's at an age, right, where he could come in and he could be director of football operations. And you could bring in a young coach like the kiddie. Well, he's not a kiddie. At MK Dons, and Tomo watched them last night at Gas and said they played a lot better football than
Russell
we did.
Russell Martin
as first team coach, and Nigel Pearson, okay, on the business side, you get a COO, which is really just a good accountant, and they've probably got one there anyway. But Pearson's been around the block. He would know how agents work. He knows what a good medical team looks like. And you could put him in as director of football. Yeah. Maybe Steve Walsh as the player identification person, but a young coach under Pearson, and then maybe another old coach like.
Hang on. You were going on just now about how we can't afford to have two left-sided centre-backs.
You just employed a board of directors there. No, you haven't. No, you've got, Ian, you've got, at the moment, Mark Ashton's been stealing a wage, £500,000, right? Pearson's already on the staff. You're going out. You could get, and trust me, I know about salaries and you do as well. You could get a bloody good football finance director or football secretary, which is allegedly, I think, the role that Luke Wurhan did, who's gone. Right, you could get a decent person in that job for £120,000 with a bonus, and you could say the bonus is based on profit on transfers, keeping wages within budget, etc., etc. So you've lost £500,000 in wage costs with Ashton. You've already got Pearson here, so I'm not overspending when you look at it like that. You've got we said with Dean Holden, he needs a director of football above him. Well, we haven't got Dean Holden. We've now got bloody good bloke in many respects. You know, we're judging Pearson on 11 games where he's had a shitty injury hit squad to inherit. You know, that's what I think is a solution. Yeah, which doesn't cost the club a lot of money. But getting back to the point you said, Ian, about having people to conduct a survey of the medical team, who's going to engage them? What are the terms of reference?
Well, the terms of reference are simple. They go in and they do a complete review of the medical team, drains up, cradle to grave. So, all right, let's look at the training. Let's look at what they do before training. Bearing in mind that some of the injuries have been away from the club. So, for example, George Nurse, Marley Watkins, another bloke who never signed. Cameron Pringer
injured at our club. When he came back.
Yeah, he was back at our club after being out on loan for 6 months. He came back, and within 2 days of going through a fitness and conditioning program, he tore his hamstring. Mm. So you look at the problems we've had with Walsh, injury, then got injured again, then came back, now he's injured. Williams.
O'Dowda. There's so many. It goes on.
So you look at the training, then you go right through the medical side of it. Right. How did you treat that injury? Well, and like I say, it will be qualified medical professionals. Good asking me to go in and do it.
Qualified football medical professionals being addressed by a football person. You can't have John Lansdowne.
Is there a will to do it?
Dave, sat in front of a medical person saying this is wrong.
Dave, the first thing I said was independent. John Lansdowne's not independent, and nor is Steve.
So you've got to get an out of work retired football physio.
There are people around who are consultants in that kind of thing who would come and do it as a project.
But who are they reporting to? Who are they giving?
They're like a troubleshooter, basically. I know.
They would feed the information back into the new CEO or Stephen Lansdowne. And you have a report, and at the end of the report, so I always do with people, I say, right, that's an action plan. If I was you, that's what I do. You can do some of it, none of it, or all of it. It's entirely up to you, sir. Because you know what they say about consultants is, you know, there's a bloke who borrows your watch to tell you what the time is.
Yeah. So, but the thing is, I agree. Look, I agree. I was just putting.
The problem is, you two, is it's a great idea, and I think 100% everybody would agree that it should be done. Based on the decisions that aren't being taken, can you really say, is there a will to do that? There's no will to kick Marhas Nack the club and bring somebody in.
Because whoever comes in, part of that, Ian, will you agree with me on this or not? Part of that person coming in is to see what is happening on a day-to-day basis. And 2 weekends' time, they're gone, and they're not back until the 1st of July.
The commercial and the playing side at the moment are on cruise control, both going backwards, with season tickets season tickets have been on sale for 2 weeks. And really, what is the USP for season ticket sales for next season There's a manager whose job is in question now, I think, now based on results. No CEO, no director of football. And because the owner, the majority owner, has decided in his wisdom that his departing CEO can still stay on,
yeah.
I think that sort of mindset shows you that there's just no will to make those.
I think it's an appalling decision that Mark Ashton is staying on till the end of May in a participative sense. You could have said, as I put on OTIP today, I had a member of staff, good team member of staff, it's 20 years ago now, and they were leaving to join a competitor. But not really. They were leaving to join somebody that was in the same industry, a bit like Ashton leaving. And I was disappointed they were going. And I said, would you like to go now? And they said, yes, please. I said, well, off you go. Yeah. And they didn't get their month's pay in lieu of notice because it's the employees. If the employer wants to keep the person to their notice but doesn't want them there, that's where garden leave comes in. But this situation, the person wanted to go. I got him off the payroll straight away. Keeping Mark Ashton on for another 6 weeks is costing City 60,000 quid.
There doesn't seem to be the will to make any critical decisions.
Quid.
There's no will to make any critical decisions right now. Do you agree?
Thomas put on it. Ashton just wants a leaving party when the restaurants open post the 17th of May. Yeah, I think that's a good one.
Yeah, but if you look at the why would that be? Why would we let these? And this is going to be a conspiracy theory, but it's well founded. If you're going to let all those players go out of contract,
yeah,
and what's the strategy behind that? The strategy could be selling the football club and giving the new owners a blank piece of paper. And so there you go. You employ your own CEO. You can rent the ground. You can rent the training ground.
That's what we said. We said that 2 months ago, Ian, didn't we?
Yeah, but I got a feeling that someone said to me on here, you were all over Pearson like a rash 8 weeks ago, Ian. That's quite correct. But when circumstances change, my opinion changes with it.
Yeah.
And just because you support somebody, I've always supported Stephen Lansdowne because I think his art's in the right place. And he's put one way or the other, he's put a huge amount of money in, but I don't think it's worked out for him. It's as simple as that. And,
well,
and
there's been
so many times when, there's been important decisions to be made. The only one you can honestly say we got right. When I listened to his podcast, he said, well, I didn't think Lee was ready for the job, but Lee told me he was, so I gave him the job.
I know, stupid.
Mark Ashton said, when I first met Lee, I knew there was something about him.
Yeah,
He said, I knew there was something about him. But like I said, it all comes down to critical decisions. And I shouldn't have, had a go at Steve because he's done brilliantly for the club and he does communicate to the fans sporadically. Yeah. No, Americans or foreign investors won't do that. But he's not. He's letting the club down right now because he's not making those decisions.
I mean, this business about players being out of contract.
You couldn't write a plot as bad as this season, could you, two?
This business about players being out of contract and Ashton and everything like that. Now, Ashton, right? Are you telling me that his mind has been 100% focused on Bristol City since the summer? And I think the answer is no. Now, here's one for you guys. Who out of Pato, Walsh, Pham and Baker could you see lining up for Ipswich Town on the opening day of next season? Now, you might look at Pham and think, well, he's too good to go there. Think about it this way. These players have been allowed to go out of a football club. They will not cost Ipswich Town a penny in transfer fees. The main beneficiaries of those players going to Ipswich Town as a group, right? The main benefit is those players are capable of getting Ipswich out of that division. And the other beneficiaries, they can be paid decent wages because there's no transfer fees. And the other beneficiaries out of that arrangement are the bloody agents of all those players as well. Because no transfer fee, the agent gets paid on the player's wage, right? And I wouldn't mind betting. Well, do you think I'm wrong to have that view, Ian, that at least two of those four could be lining up for Ipswich next season? What do you think?
I don't care.
No, you don't care. But you just said about...
Yeah, but you're getting all exercised about it.
No, not getting excited. You said about conspiracy theories, right? You know, as Ashton just being, look, I'll sort you out, Mr. American investor.
Dave, they got to be realistic, the conspiracy theories. I mean, Lansdowne selling the club. He said he wants outside investment. Now, that could mean, so if I'm an outside investor, what am I buying? Because there's no assets. We've been over this before. Pula own the assets, right? The training ground, I'm not going to call it by that stupid
abbreviation. High performance center, isn't it?
Is that what it's called? Shut up. Don't even mention it to me because I'll throw the computer out the window.
It's mad as hell. We can't take it anymore, David.
Yeah, if I buy a football club, right? If I buy Bristol City Football Club, there are no assets, right? The only assets you've got are players.
It's a brand,
right? Well, yeah, and it's not a very strong brand, is it? Let's hope we're in the Championship because we could still go down. It's unlikely, even after tonight, but we could still go down. And we're bad enough to lose the next three games every day of the week. We're terrible. Yeah. So I don't care where Nathan Baker goes and plays next season because he won't play. He'll be injured after season. He has throughout his career. You know, we're saying, well, build a side around Liam Walsh and Joe Williams. Are they going to be fit? And I'm not knocking either of the kids. I like them as footballers. But are they going to be fit? Because if they're not fit and they're not playing, how are you going to build a side around them?
Yeah,
Tom said the other week, we got loads of midfield players. No, Les, we got loads of midfield players. We haven't. Right, we have, but they're not fit. So, how far do you go? You've got to be looking at the players and think, right, how many games a season realistically am I going to get out of him? Because we need to play 50 games in a season if we're marginally successful. That's four cup games, 46 league games. Mm. How many games are they going to play? Now, the ones you've mentioned, if they all go and play, first they're dropping down to League One. So that'd be a whacking great pay cut for him.
But hang on, Ian. No, I disagree there because Ipswich want to build. You haven't read. I said this to Mark before you came on in the East Anglian Times today. Ipswich done an £18 million share issue. So they've got money, right? And they haven't got to pay transfer fees, right? So with FAM, look, FAM is allegedly somebody's put on here. FAM could be going to Borough for £30,000 a week. Right. So, but they haven't got to pay any money for FAM. Right. So they could say to FAM, right, you know, we can only pay you £15,000 a week on a 3-year deal. Right. Which, you know, they'd have to pay his wages anyway. But we're going to give you £1.5 million signing on fee, which over £10,000 a week.
He won't want to play level, David. He wants to play for Senegal, remember?
Or you reckon?
Part player. Yeah,
that's cash.
All right, maybe he's not the best example. But
yeah, but you're talking about, one minute you're talking about a pandemic, and then the next minute you're saying you've got a £1.5 million signing on fee. Instead of a transfer fee, but it's still £1.5 million. All right, they could say we'll give you a three-year contract, £500,000 the first of January every year.
Said they can't spend that. We want Dave. I'm way off. Yeah, you're right.
Cut to the chase. I could see him getting Patterson. I don't know where Walsh would go. I mean, if you're sensible, you think he'd leave because he just hadn't been fit. But we could have ruined the careers of Liam Walsh and Joe Williams.
Jack could end up somewhere like Ipswich, couldn't he? But look, I mean, some Red Robin said on here, nothing to do with transfers. While I'm at it, everybody says best players are Bentley and Callis. And if they're that good, we wouldn't be shipping so many shit goals, yeah? Lisa said, FAM won't go to Borough for that, no chance. Baza said, why would you want Diju to stay? He's shite. Totally agree with him. Pearson will now focus on next season. Well, he doesn't even know if he's going to be here yet. And what Tomo's saying, you would hope that an announcement on Pearson will be made by Friday. I mean, timing is everything, isn't it?
Pearson will not. If we'd have won tonight, he'd have been announced by Friday.
Yeah.
But I think you've got two situations. I think you're looking at Lansdowne is looking at his record. He's looking at how we're playing, and he's got to be disappointed. Even, you know, from his point of view. And I think when it comes to football, God bless Steve, but he's a bit naive. And I don't think he knows a lot about the game. I mean, in the conversations I've had with him personally, John knows a lot more about the football side of the game, you know, in terms of tactics and, you know, formations and all that good stuff. So, first of all, we need to know from Steve, after he set all those errors racing by going on the Three Peeps podcast, give those lads a plug. So, you go, we need to know who the manager is, who's coming in with him is less important. Are we having a CEO or aren't we bothering? We just have a chairman and a director of football. And is Steve staying on as the primary owner, even if he sells 49% to somebody else? But I still come back to, if I was putting in, let's say I was putting 30 million into Bristol City, which would probably make up for what we're going to lose this year. So we're not going to get fat on that. What would I get? I can't get my money back. Because he'd be gone.
Yeah.
What am I actually? There's no asset there for me to own that I could think, oh, well, if I get in trouble, I can always flog the training ground or the stadium.
But these people, £30 million is worth a punt.
Is the way that he's woven Bristol Sport together going to put off any potential investors?
Not because really, Mark, because you could
in Bristol Sport, aren't they?
You could. I mean, Ipswich, the Americans there put 40 million in to buy it, but that's locked, as I understand it, that's lock, stock, and barrel, stadium, training ground, everything. So if you put you couldn't buy Ashton Gate for 40 million, that would be retail value 70-80 million quid. I know we spent 50 million to build it, but that would be about 70-80 million quid. The training ground would probably be another 20. 22
alone. What? Really? Ashton Gate, 50 million for the stadium?
Well, that's what we paid to... That's what we paid to build it.
I know. Well, the interesting dynamic there in terms of how much you get for it, we need to look at... You remember Leicester City at Filbert Street? They built that massive, great, big double-decker stand and then flattened it and moved away. I think it's an over... You know, I think that's an overestimation of what the ground as real estate is worth, because you've got to flatten it and clear it, and then you've got to build it, and you got to get planning permission, and you know what it's like trying to get planning permission in Bristol. Guys, we've done this to death. It is like Groundhog Day, and you know, we're going up this hill where we get to the top of the hill and the decisions have to be made, be it manager, be it chief executive, be it new players, be it medical team, you know, da-da-da-da-da. It's all the chickens are coming home to roost. And I'm concerned, as I think you are and everybody who's listening on this, is our football club, and we've got to talk about football club being taken away from the fans relation to the failed ESL. But our football club, I don't think, has been in such a bad state on a variety of levels, infrastructure apart, for a very, very, very long time. This is worse than when Sean O'Driscoll came in or McInnes and people like that. The squad is a mess. We never had that many players out of contract. Okay, most of them, good riddance to them, but it is an utter, utter mess. And with 2 weekends of football to go, and they're back for training in, 10 weeks for the start of next season, right? It's going to have to be some very big decisions taken relatively quickly, in the overall scheme of things. And that means analysis of the medical team, getting a chief executive. You know, if somebody's in a job at the moment, you know, they might have to work 3 months' notice. So you bring in somebody from out of football, an Ed Woodward type who's never been anywhere near football. He's just done deals. I don't think that's what's going to happen. And the big unknown is, what is this all part of a tactic of Lansdowne with new investment, that there is a critical point where that comes in and it's being held back for a reason that we don't know. We've been speculating since middle of February, when it looked like Holden was going to be on his way. And we don't know. We can speculate, and we're not moaning. We're speculating.
I just think it's incompetence.
And it looks bad. Yeah, and as I say, my season ticket, two hospitality passes, I've got to come up with, I think it's 3,600 quid. In fact, that's right, that's what it is, 3,600 quid. I ain't doing it, right? I am not doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, because they've lost my confidence. I have fallen out of love with the club, as a lot of people our age have, yeah, because we've been taken to the brink with the Man United game, or what have you, 3.5 years ago, nearly that, well, heading towards 3.5 years ago. That was the closest. We've had to put up with 3.5 years of decline, and we've had 1 year where we've got out of the habit of going. Now, I will still go to every game, but they're not having 3.5 grand of my money. That's for two tickets. They'll get a grand, and at least I'll get a pensioner's bloody ticket if I get it in the Lansdowne. Very, very sad. Guys, the big news this week, we're going to spend a lot more time talking about it. It was is the European Super League. The best comment I saw on Twitter was somebody put, the European Super League is a bit like a bloke of a gang of blokes arranging to go out on the piss, but they haven't cleared it with their missus beforehand. Sort of thing. I mean... Ian, it all happened very quickly, the European Super League, in the sense that it was there and then it was gone. What are your thoughts on that as a concept? That's obviously falling on his face.
My analogy was, it was a little bit like me waiting for the World Snooker Championships to take place, going up to the Crucible in Sheffield, and when Ronnie O'Sullivan's playing, going up and putting 50 pence on the corner of the table.
I saw that. That was another good
and that one. That was Tottenham being in it, you know, and Arsenal. Let's be honest. Yeah. Top six, you know, big six. Well, yeah, 20 years ago, perhaps. And then not Tottenham. So my view on it, it lasted 2 days. It should never have been done. It's wrong. I don't believe in much these days, because money's ruined football for me.
Yeah,
but I do believe in the pyramid, and I do look at clubs that have done a great deal better than us. So, you know, you could name them, the ones that gone up to the Premier League, even if they've had problems afterwards. So you've got Swindon, Barnsley. I did a Nigel Pearson there. Yeah, threw a random yeah into a question. You've got Swindon, Barnsley, Norwich, Huddersfield, Swansea,
Cardiff,
Burnley, Cardiff. All these clubs have gone up because of the pyramid.
Yeah.
Right? And a lot of them have gone
except
up.
Us.
Norwich. Yeah, Norwich this season. I mean, I told you when we played them, at the team we put out cost 35 million transfer value. Their team cost 8.
Yeah.
So I've... It should never have happened, and people apologising isn't any good. It's a little bit like when somebody says something absolutely dreadful about you, it's untrue, and then they say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. Well, okay, you had to be thinking it to say it.
Yeah.
So why did you think it?
Yeah.
And how did they think they were going to get away with, I know we live in a post-truth world, and don't get me started on politics, but how did they think it was going to be perceived? What in what world did they think? Well, that's a good idea. We'll do that. The fans won't mind.
I know.
You know, how were they going to play all these? Well, they were going to play the extra games because they weren't going to go in for the Champions League.
I know.
And who runs the Champions League? UEFA. Who UEFA. Runs European football?
UEFA.
Who runs world football? FIFA and UEFA report into FIFA.
Yeah, no, they're on a hide into nothing. And at least we haven't got somebody like Blatter at the very top of the game, because you can imagine him sanctioning it, unless that Santino or Fantino, whatever his name is. Mark, I mean, your thoughts. It was here today, gone tomorrow, really, wasn't it?
Well, the biggest joke was Florentino Perez said the European Super League is going to save football. And a friend of mine said, in one way, it has, if you know, if their actions address the problem. But I think that they'll use this to try and get their way, perhaps with the next lot of TV rights or negotiating prize money for the revamped Champions League that you kindly told me about. And I've looked through the article in New York Times. God, can't make head or tail of how it works. It's It's crazy. 36-team league where you only play 10 games in the first round.
I know. No, I said that. Yeah, I don't know. Have you read that, Ian, what the UEFA were coming up with for the proposals for the next Champions League? I suggest you read it if you've got time before Saturday.
One thing I'd like to add, David. Can I just add one
thing? Go on.
If you go back to clubs that go into administration and chances like Chan Siri and the Wigan debacle last season, their owners put the club into trouble and the league punished the clubs by a deduction of points. Now, I know this; they only fought this, but they signed contracts. They were prepared to make the Premier League suffer, and it would have killed the pyramid if this had gone ahead. I think that they should be deducted points for their actions. That's the only thing.
That was going to be my next question to both of you. Do you think?
Yeah, that's the only thing that will hurt the clubs.
Do you think that's viable, Ian? Punishing them for something that, as you say, they spoke about, but it didn't happen. They signed up, admittedly, it didn't happen.
Who are you punishing? If you deduct points, you're punishing the club.
You're punishing the fans, aren't you?
You're punishing the fans, you're punishing the manager, and you're punishing the players who had F all squared to do with it.
You're right.
The same thing happened to the players and the fans.
Hang on, Mark. Hang on a minute. Those players didn't know anything about it. There was a chief executive at one of the big six, they haven't named him, who said, first I heard of it was on Sky Sports. So his owner, and even had the good manners to ring him up and say, oh, by the way, we're doing something a little bit different. I hope you're all right with it, but we're doing it. And we've all, I've said in the previous podcast, I work for owners who would do that. And if you do what I did, which is probably stupid, you pack your job in and leave the business. So I think where we are, I think they should fine them, and I think the fine should be £100 million each.
It's not going to happen, Ian.
They'll take notice of that. Well, you say, well,
there is one thing you could have thought of, actually.
Go on, Mark.
Yeah, they could. All right, appeal it, and then fine them some more.
If you don't, a fine would make no difference unless it's a ridiculous amount of money. What you could do, and this would hurt clubs at the top, is put a really long transfer embargo on them for 2 or 3 years. Then, not being able to, to trade, that will hurt them. But I think the ultimate sanction for these clubs, the only thing that will make them sit up and take notice, and I'm sorry about the fans of these clubs, but there are clubs in better position than them who could qualify for the Champions League through merit in West Ham and Leicester.
Yeah.
And the only thing, the ultimate sanction is deduct points. And I'm sorry, but it's tough shit, as far as I'm concerned. The major bed, I know the fans will turn on you, but, that's you've done it.
I hear what you both say on that, and it sounds a grand idea, but I just don't think... I don't think they're going to get fined. I mean, somebody's put PBG has put on here, ban them from the Champions League for the coming season. Yeah. And whatever season they
qualify. Spurs and Arsenal.
Spurs and Arsenal. You ban them from
the Champions League in 2026.
The teams in the group of six that broke away that are in the top four, you ban them. Well, in fact, you could ban all six of them for any UEFA competition for 4 years. There we go. That's it. Doesn't cost them a fine. It costs them lost income through non-participation. And then they won't get the players to go and play for them because the top players won't want to not be involved in European competition. That's the best thing to do. Good point there, PBG.
But once again, you're punishing the fans, aren't you, and what have they done wrong? Apart from stop it, because it was the likes of Gary Neville kicking it off, the fans, the managers. Jordan Henderson got all the Premier Division captains together. So what you're going to say, you're going to punish them for what's
in
America.
I hear what
done.
You say, but that's as Mark said on another point, that's tough shit. I mean, look, Liverpool fans, they caused the Heysel Stadium disaster. All English teams banned from European football for, what was it, 5 years?
Five years in the end, yeah.
All English teams.
Yeah, Which was the wrong thing to do.
Well, no, but I'm
they
just
should,
saying
they should ban Liverpool. No one else should ban Liverpool.
Therefore, they should ban the six clubs that form the breakaway. All right, maybe 5 years is too long. You say 3 years, no European competition, regardless of what position you finish in. And that will level it up a bit as well, because you'll then get your Evertons and people like that. You know, Everton could finish sixth or seventh and be seen as the top English side because others are barred from competing. So no money, but it hits them. It still hits them in the pocket, but not with a token fine of 100 quid, because that's 1.5 players that they won't buy. That's just my view.
100 million. No, Dave, 100 million hurts. If you get fined 100 million, I don't care who you are. You notice that.
Well, they just coughed up 300 million each, didn't they, to be part of it? Or were they given 300 million each? No, they were given.
They were given. They were That's given right. 300. There's
I
a
mean,
big difference.
It's interesting.
Dave.
Who are the TV companies that were going to underwrite this so-called Super League? Yeah,
it was the American bank, JP Morgan, that were actually underwriting.
So it was nothing to do with because Sky would have been.
No, there was no TV. There's no TV contract in place.
No, but who would have taken it? Sky or Netflix or somebody like that? Would it have been one of the three?
No, Sky wouldn't. Sky had no discussions with them whatsoever and wouldn't.
The
Disney Channel was one.
Yeah.
I think Netflix. I think Amazon. This is true. I'm not making it up. Amazon.
I know. It just does sound funny when you say the Disney Channel.
They already screen football, but what they thought they could do, because the Americans, I've had conversations with Americans before when they've talked about buying football clubs, right? I said, you do realise you can't buy a club in Bristol and move it to Glasgow or vice versa. You do realise that, it's a franchise.
Well,
it can play anywhere. It can't.
Well, that's the worrying thing about Steve Lansdowne selling Bristol City as a football club to some Americans, and they decide to take it off and play it somewhere else.
Well, the only time it's happened in recent years is King's Dons, isn't it?
Yeah. That's the only time it's happening. Guys, look, it's 10:45.
And by the way, that was an English bloke that bought MK Dons.
Pete Winkleman. Pete Winkleman, that's right.
Terry Red Records.
Yeah. So Mendip City, I like this one to finish with. Surely the Disney Channel should invest in a Mickey Mouse Club. Anyone? No one. Well, yeah, they've just got relegated to League Two. And I like something else on Twitter that somebody put about social distancing, keep two divisions apart. I thought that was a very good visual on there as well. But that went well for them, didn't it? Getting, Joey Barton in. And I said this on Saturday, the Sunderland fans are... Well, at least he got a draw last night up at Hull, didn't he? So
it's all right, Dave. They've moved on to the clutch and the grab, and they're absolutely castigating the bloke. It's really funny because they've picked up on it, in fairness, a lot quicker than City fans did. Yeah. You know, what was he going on about with the clutch and the grab? What's that about?
It sounds like sexual harassment.
A lot of people have been here saying, Ian, they want you to do. We're not going to do any impressions now because I want to go and get a piece of toast and a cup of tea before I go to bed, right? But this weekend against Luton, I can drink before bed and not have to get up in the middle of the night.
Don't you go pissing in the bed again, Dave? That was embarrassing.
Ian, you can do. Tomo is asking this, and a few other people are asking it as well. We can have Lee Johnson and Gary Johnson in the same studio. All right, so you can do all three.
I'd rather have a go at...
Did you hear Joey Barton last night?
No, I didn't.
He's now said the fault of the... he's gone on to tobacco now. He apparently, footballers, this is true, there is an illegal chewing tobacco. And a lot of footballers believe, without any scientific evidence, that it enhances your performance.
Yeah.
So he said that's one of the things is wrong with the club is they're all on this chewing tobacco. You know, like the Cowboys used to do. They'd be stood there and they go, yeah. Now I just want to say they're going, bang, and it'd go in the spittoon.
Oh, yeah, Josie Wales, wasn't it?
Yeah, Josie, how are you? And it'd go, bang, and go in the old bloody spittoon. Well, yeah. He reckons they're all on that. I mean, no wonder you'd be better. Do you know what? You'd be better off getting a load of marijuana in before the next game's here. Smoke that, and see if you can do any.
No, the other thing, guys. Well, the other thing, I'll probably save it till after season. But I had a lovely chat this week on for a good hour and 20 minutes with our former manager John Ward. Yeah, who took us to promotion in 97-98. Really nice long chat with him. And I asked him about the summer transfers. Well, if you listen to the interview when we upload it, the summer transfers in the summer of 98 when we signed Adiakin by Søren Andersen and Tony Thorpe. And he said he knew nothing about Tony Thorpe being signed until he got back from holiday. And Mark Ashton wasn't even involved with the club back then. Yeah, so
that was Scott Davidson, wasn't it? I think he took Archie Gooch's money.
He didn't like to name names. He confirmed the fact that he wanted Ray Harford. But the interesting part of chatting to John was talking about his pre-Bristol City career. And yes, it was as assistant to Graham Taylor, but with Watford and with Villa, they took both of those clubs up. And this is in the years when you could do it, and it shows that back then you could achieve a lot. Both those clubs, Watford and Villa, got them up and then finished second in what is now the Premier League in each of their first seasons. And he also talked about what it was like having Elton John as a chairman, because that was in those days as well. So John, lovely bloke, lovely chat. I'll put it up on Twitter when we're going to post it.
He played for Lincoln, didn't he?
He played 230 games for Lincoln and scored 91 goals. And Graham Taylor was a teammate and his captain. And he took him to Watford for a short period. And then he recommended that John got the York City manager job. And then he went to the Gas. He left York City when they were on the verge of the playoffs that particular season, went to the Gas. And then, as I say, he left the Gas.
He talked to Luton about a vacancy.
Well, I asked him that as well. That's a very good point. Yeah. They talked to Luton. They didn't renew his contract. But if you listen when it comes out, it's a really good chat. Gentlemen and all listeners, we've had another good audience tonight, north of 120, which is great. I think we're going to go through 25,000 downloads by the time we get through the end of the weekend. We've had 1,174 likes, which is great. So that's probably Tomo sat there and a couple of others just hitting, liking everything we say. Bazza, great show, guys. I'm bored now. Good night. Thank you, Bazza. Yeah, we'll see you next week. It's not Saturday, it's Sunday, and it's a lunchtime one. We'll decide what time we're going to do it. We'll talk about that off air. Have a good evening, boys and people out there listening, and speak at the weekend. All the best. Cheers now.
Yeah, thanks very much.
God bless.
Take it easy. Bye.